chapter 43. We're going to be seeing Benjamin sent to Egypt. And we're picking right back up off where we left off, Genesis chapter 43. And as we read last week, the famine that God gave Pharaoh in his divine dream kind of brought it up to him, Joseph interpreting it. That famine has come to pass, and it's a great famine. And Joseph was appointed leader over Egypt during this time to help lead them through the famine because he interpreted the dream. And his brothers have already come, got their first ration. There's a lot of people coming in and out of Egypt getting their food and stuff. And remember, this famine covered a huge area, if not most of the earth. And many people were unaware of how long this famine was. The people that weren't were Joseph, the Pharaoh, and probably the heads, because it was interpreted in the Pharaoh's divine dream. So chapter 43 is just continuing right where we left off, so let's get into it. Genesis chapter 43, verse 1. And the famine was sore in the land. And the famine being sore in the land, meaning this famine was severe. And remember back in chapter 41, Pharaoh's divine dream was illustrated and given to him by God twice. And Joseph interpreting that it was given to him twice to kind of show God showing them the severity and importance of this famine. That's why it was given more than once. This famine was a severe famine. A lot of the world being affected by it. So verse 2. And it came to pass, when they had eaten up the corn which they had brought out of Egypt, their father said unto them, Go again, buy us a little food. So we're back here with Jacob and his 10 sons. Remember, he has 12 sons total, one being Joseph. Joseph, he believed to be dead. They all believed he'd be to be dead, but he's actually leading Egypt through this famine. He's unaware of it. And Simeon. Simeon's the other of the 12, and Joseph kept him bound in Egypt from the first time they went and got food, kind of keeping them captive for when they come back. So verse 3. And Judah spake unto him, saying, The man did solemnly protest unto us, saying, Ye shall not see my face, except your brother be with you. So Jacob's telling his sons to go back and get more food. Judah is speaking up and telling them, We can't show our face back there without our brother. Well, the brother they're talking about here, they're referencing Benjamin, the youngest. And Benjamin was Joseph's full brother. Benjamin and Joseph were both the children of Jacob's favorite wife, Rachel. And Joseph is believed by his father to be dead at this time, so Benjamin is sort of the favorite son. And we're going to get more into that here in a minute. Verse 4. If thou wilt send our brother with us, so this is Judah speaking to Jacob, if thou wilt send our brother with us, we will go down and buy thee food. So they're telling their father Jacob that the only way they can go back and get food is if they send Benjamin with them. And Jacob showed his favoritism for Joseph because he was believed to be dead. If we remember, Joseph was given the coat of many colors, which was a rare item at the time. So understandably, Jacob's going to have some great favoritism over Benjamin. That's his last son from Rachel, who was his favorite wife. And after all, he believes Benjamin, once again, is his last son from Rachel. And the last time he sent his favorite son out of the land, his favorite son was killed, being Joseph, which we know he wasn't, but Jacob doesn't believe it. He was actually sold off by his brothers. So verse 5. But if thou wilt not send him, we will not go down. For the man said unto us, Ye shall not see my face, except your brother be with you. So once again, they're telling Jacob, We will not go down and try to get food if you don't send Benjamin with us. Reiterating, Benjamin has to go with us for us to bring back more food. There's a famine, and we need food, but we're not going back. The Egyptian being Joseph made it clear. Verse 6. And Israel said, Wherefore dealt ye so ill with me as to tell me the man whether ye had yet a brother? Jacob being Israel, saying, Why in the world would you tell him you had another brother? And he showed an expression that he's pretty aggravated about this at the time. And remember, Jacob's a very intelligent man. He has a lot of common sense, and we've seen through his upcoming story him kind of showing smart plan of action throughout his earlier years. And if we remember, his original Israel's original name, Jacob, meaning heel grabber, in his earlier story with his brother Esau, he shows, and I'm going to quote, put this in quotations, honest deception, right? So ways he can sort of rightly manipulate certain situations. And that's why Jacob's getting upset with his sons about this, because he's familiar with that rightful deception. Why would you even tell him you have another brother? But if we remember, they were caught off guard. So verse 7. And they said, "The man asked us straightly of our state and our kindred, saying, 'Is your father yet alive? Have ye another brother?' And we told him, 'According to the tenor of these words, could we certainly know that he would say, Bring your brother down.'" Remember, these men don't realize Jacob is who he is. He's playing the role of that Egyptian leader. So Joseph's asking him questions that most strangers wouldn't be asking. But Joseph knows them. He knows who they are. And just like the question, "How is your father?" this caught them off guard. Joseph and their father were very close in relationship, so they weren't really expecting this Egyptian leader to be asking about their personal family. It was uncommon. They don't realize that Joseph is who he is. So verse 8. "And Judah said unto Israel, his father, 'Send the lad with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, both we and thou, and also our little ones.'" So what are we seeing from Judah here? He's kind of stepping up and playing the leadership role over his brothers. And he's telling his father, "Look, send Benjamin with me. If we don't go and collect food for our people, our families, our children will die. We don't have any other choice." And also, again, showing emphasis on the severity of this famine at the time. But Judah's stepping up here. He's showing pretty good leadership of that responsibility of making sure he takes Benjamin and brings him back safely to his father. And, well, let's keep reading. Verse 9. "I will be surety of him," that being Judah, "of my hand shalt thou require him. If I bring him not unto thee and set him before thee, then let me bear the blame forever." So surety, Hebrew meaning to give or be security of or over. Judah's taking big ownership over his brother Benjamin, saying, "If anything happens to him, I'll be the one to blame. Not my brothers, not you, not anyone. I'll take the blame." And given the circumstances, this is a pretty bold statement. We know, you know, Joseph already kept Simeon in bondage at the drop of a hat. So Judah's really showing his understanding of the importance of this trip. They have to have this food. They can't go collect more food for their people without bringing Benjamin, because then that puts their whole tribe at risk of starvation. So Judah's really stepping up here. This is a pretty big ordeal. Verse 10. "For except we had lingered, surely now we had returned this second time." So this is giving us somewhat of a context, a period of time. We had lingered. So showing there had been some time between now and the first time they received food in Egypt. And I just want to point out that Simeon's still captive here. He's still captive in Egypt. And even after this period of time, they, even Jacob being, having that covenant between God, he doesn't know the time period of this famine. The only ones that do are the ones that were a part of Pharaoh's dream. So they're kind of caught off guard by this whole situation. And we're going to see this is just God's plan unfolding. Verse 11. "And their father Israel," or Jacob, "said unto them, 'If it must be so now, do this. Take of the best fruits in the land in your vessels, and carry down the man a present, a little balm and a little honey, spices and myrrh, nuts and almonds, and take double money in your hand, and the money that was brought again in the mouth of your sacks, carry it again in your hand. Peradventure, it was an oversight.'" So their father, Jacob, is giving them the green light here and giving them like a smart plan of action. Take gifts, take double the money because it must be so, and maybe they just overlooked the payment. Because if we remember, they went and got food, but when they got back to the camp, they still had all their money. So Jacob, look at that phrase there, because it must be so. Jacob, who is a man of God, is sort of showing his shortcomings of the flesh here. And he's scared to lose his son. He's so scared to lose his son that he's forgetting to have faith in God's plan. He's forgetting to have faith in God's protection. God's plan will be done. He's not really showing us a great representation of his faith in God. And we're going to hit on that a little bit deeper in just a second. Verse 13. Take also your brother, excuse me, and arise. Go again unto the man. So, saving this instruction for last, showing he's kind of hesitant on it, take your brother. And God Almighty give you mercy before the man, that he may send away your other brother and Benjamin. If I be bereaved of my children, I am bereaved. And bereaved in the Hebrew dialect here, meaning to suffer abortion, to lose his children. And when reading through this, this verse here, I almost read it as a negatively optimistic statement, like a glass half-empty statement from Jacob. Jacob's doubtful throughout this conversation with his sons, but yet he does understand that this is the only way his people can be fed. And he ends with, and God give you mercy before the man. He's basically saying, we have to do this. Whatever happens will happen. God protect you. And which is true and somewhat of a good outlook on it, but there's a difference between having strong faith in God and then completely letting go and just, well, whatever happens is going to happen anyway. We got to do it. And I want to put ourselves in Jacob's shoes for a second. You know, many times we go through hardships, we go through trials, tribulation, affliction, but as children and followers of God, we not only have to understand that God's will be done, but also have faith in knowing that God lines certain things up in order for his plan, the bigger plan, to come to be. We have to understand that. And kind of piggybacking on what James hit on last Sunday is, if we only base what we know from Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 to now, we know that eternal salvation, or Christ, is to come from the lineage of one of these sons. And we know the covenant between God and Abraham, where this is promised in Genesis chapter 12, has been passed down from Abraham to Isaac to Jacob to, at this point in the chapter, one of the 12 sons of Israel, or Jacob, are going to inherit this covenant. We don't know which one yet, just based off of what we read. So with Jacob's knowledge and holder of the covenant, he knows this promise from God. He understands that it was passed down to him. He also knows that he has to one day pass it down. So he's not really representing strong faith here because he's not trusting in God's plan. And you know, just like in our own lives, us here in the flesh on earth, even as followers and children of God, we're going to experience hardships. We're going to experience troubles, tense and stressful situations. And for one, it gives us a test of our faith. And also what we're seeing here, and we're going to keep unfolding in this chapter, is that God puts certain things into play and he allows things to happen. So at the time, we might see it as a hardship, but these hardships are sometimes necessary in order to unfold God's greater plan for his children, for us. And we have to understand that. And in the case of this chapter, what is the outcome of God's plan? For Christ to come from one of these lineages in order to provide us, humans, with everlasting and eternal life. That's the context of this chapter of what he's lining up. So don't be blinded by affliction, trials, tribulations. Trust and know and have faith in God, and his will, not ours, is for the greater good. Trust in these hardships. We're going to go through them. Same thing we're seeing here with Jacob. It's chapter 5, or verse 15. And the men took that present, and they took double money in their hand, and Benjamin, and rose up, and went down to Egypt, and stood before Joseph. So they proceeded with what was needed to be done to acquire food for their people. They're taking this plan into action. Verse 16. And when Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the ruler of his house, "Bring these men home and slay and make ready, for these men shall dine with me at noon." So, ruler of the house here, kind of being the overseer under Joseph in his home, but Joseph saying, "Bring these men into my home, prepare meat to eat, and make fixings ready because they're going to dine with us tonight." And I want to look at something. We talked about it. James talked about it last Sunday. There's a lot of traffic in and out of Egypt. There's like convoys in and out. And these men are kind of being separated from all those other people going into Egypt getting food. So we're going to kind of see, keep that in the back of your mind here. Verse 17. And the man did as Joseph bade, and the man brought the men into Joseph's house. And the men were afraid because they were brought into Joseph's house, and they said, "Because of the money that was returned in our sacks at the first time are we brought in, that he may seek occasion against us and fall upon us and take us for bondmen and our asses." So they were afraid because, once again, Joseph separated and singled them out from the rest of the convoy and traffic getting grain from Egypt. And they think because it was because they never paid for the first purchase, and Joseph's going to be wroth with them. That's what's going on. And James went over this last Sunday. They didn't know that Joseph covered the payment. This is his project, and the Pharaoh put him in charge, and he has power over the money, over the food, so he can allow certain things to happen and slip through the cracks, whether he paid their portion or just let them have it. So verse 19. These men are scared that Joseph's going to be wroth with them. Verse 19, and they came near to the steward of Joseph's house, and they communed with him at the door. So pay attention here. They're speaking with the Egyptian steward of Joseph's house, not Joseph. Verse 20, and said, "O sir, we came indeed down at the first time to buy food, and it came to pass when we came to the inn that we opened our sacks, and behold, every man's money was in the mouth of his sack, our money in full weight, and we have brought it again in our hand. And our and other money have we brought down in our hand to buy food. We cannot tell who put our money in our sacks." So they're explaining, sort of spilling their guts here to the steward, what's going on, what's taking place. And remember, they're scared because they're somewhat being singled out by Joseph. So they're like, "Look, this is what happened. This is, we brought more money, the money that we didn't pay last time. You know, we're here. We're not trying to cause problems." But they're still unaware that Joseph is who he is, and he's playing the role of this Egyptian still. And they don't know that Joseph is actually wanting to gather and fellowship with his brothers. That's why he's calling them into their house. And we're going to see that as we go, but going back to, once again, what James hit on last Sunday is we're kind of seeing Joseph's actions here kind of mirror Christ-like actions. And you can flip there, but I want to take a look at a verse here in the New Testament. It's 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 9. I'm going to pull it up on the slide here. And it says, "God is faithful, by whom ye were called unto the fellowship of his Son, Jesus Christ, our Lord." So this verse here is highlighting the faithful nature of God in establishing a spiritual connection with believers through Christ. And what are we seeing Joseph requesting here? A gathering and fellowship between all 12 of the sons of Israel. Kind of a reflection of Christ-like nature. And something to remember, these 12 brothers haven't been together in over 20 years, given the whole context. And once again, Jacob kind of mirroring Christ-like action, and Christ is to come from one of these 12 sons' lineages. So just keep that in mind. Joseph's really representing Christ here and being that mirror of God's faith through fellowship. So Let's see the steward's response here, verse 23. And he said, "Peace be to you, fear not, your God and the God of your father have given you treasure in your sacks. I had your money, and he brought Simeon out unto them." He, being the steward here, emphasizes your. So the steward states, "I had your money, I put it back in your sacks, and he proceeded to release Simeon, who they had captive from the first time they visited. So what are we seeing here? Joseph, who is playing the role of the head Egyptian during the famine, Joseph's a Hebrew, right? So the steward was most likely a born Egyptian. So we're going to see in a few verses that Egyptians weren't really prominent to outsiders. And we also learn that from Joseph being accused of rape. So Joseph hasn't yet returned. The steward was a part of these actions appointed by Joseph. So here we're seeing God's plan really, or his plan of action taking place, and God using believers and non-believers to line up the pawns for his greater plan to take effect. The steward here doesn't say, "my God," he says, "your God," kind of showing that he's not a follower of Yahweh, of God, but he's also being used in God's plan, representing God's plan, taking action here. So keep that in mind. God can use believers and non-believers for his greater plan to take effect. Verse 24. And the man brought the men into Joseph's house and gave them water, and they washed their feet, and he gave their asses provender. So they're receiving hospitality here. These men thought they were being sought after, but the steward's explaining from your God and showing them great hospitality. It's kind of giving them some ease and kind of settling down some here. They were worked up, but you know, God's plan's taking effect. They're being showed hospitality by the steward. Verse 25. And they made ready the present against Joseph, came at noon, for they heard that they should eat bread there. And when Joseph came home, they brought him the present which was in their hand into the house and bowed themselves to him to the earth. So check this out. These men were told back in chapter 37 that through Joseph's divine dream, back when they were all with their father, that they would bow down to him, right? Well, they hated it. That's what led them to selling him as a slave in the first place. This is the second time they've bowed down to Joseph unknowingly. Joseph had two different divine dreams from God where they bowed down to him. So again, God's plan from chapter 37 unfolding and taking place. And even though through all the hardship that Joseph's been through, all this during the famine, God's plan is unfolding, whether they like it or not, whether if anyone else is lining it up or not, God's plan is taking effect here. What he said will happen is happening. Verse 27, and he asked them of their welfare and said, "Is your father well, the old man of whom ye spake? Is he yet alive?" So once again, he's asking about his father, asking about Jacob. Verse 28, and they answered, "Thy servant, our father, is in good health. He is yet alive." And they bowed down their heads and made obeisance. And obeisance meaning honoring or royalty. So Joseph again asking them about their family and them bowing down and showing him respect for that. It's kind of uncommon for an Egyptian ruler to be asking about your personal family. So they're showing him great respect for it. Again, they do not know that this is Joseph. So verse 29. And he lifted up his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and said, "Is this your younger brother of whom ye spake unto me?" And he said, "God be gracious unto thee, my son." So Joseph is finally laying eyes on Benjamin, and Benjamin was his only full-blooded brother. And it states, "God be gracious unto thee, my son." At this point in time, Joseph hasn't said anything like this to the brothers in the role of the head Egyptian. So this is kind of like a change in outlook on Joseph as the Egyptian leader. So look at this. It's kind of like a turning point for the brothers' outlook on him. So verse 30. And Joseph made haste, for his bowels did yearn upon his brother, and he sought where to weep. and he entered his chamber and wept there. So Joseph, being overwhelmed with emotions right now, he finally sees his brother, and him and his other 11 brothers are together fellowshipping. They're all brothers are there together, enjoying each other. He's finally seeing his full brother. So this is a lot to take in, given the circumstances of what's taken place over the past 20 years. So you can only imagine, you haven't seen all your siblings in 20 years. Y'all were all together fellowshipping, having a good time. That's pretty emotional. So Joseph kind of separates himself to get himself right with his emotions. So verse 31. And he washed his face and went out and refrained himself and said, "Set on bread." And so he stepped away to eat, and he washed up, leaving no signs that, you know, he was worked up about his brothers, because he stood up wanting them to know who he actually is. And remember, they're still unaware. So they're keeping that there. They're just, the brothers are having a better outlook on him now. So verse 32. And they said on him, for him by himself, and for them by themselves, and for the Egyptians which did eat with them by themselves, because the Egyptians might not eat bread with the Hebrews, for that is an abomination unto the Egyptians. So Joseph's eating by himself because he's political royalty. So he has his own place. The other Egyptians of the house are eating separated from the 11 brothers because, I mean, quite frankly, there was a sense of racial superiority in Egypt. Right? They didn't intermingle. That's what's taking place. So they segregated because it was believed the Egyptians to be wrong to intermingle with outsiders with certain things, dining being one of them. They're eating separated. Verse 33. And they sat before him, the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth, and the men marveled one at another. And he took and sent messes unto them from before him, but Benjamin's mess was five times so much as any of theirs, and they drank and were merry with him. So all these brothers sat together, fellowshipping. Joseph sent messes of food with them. They're having a great time. But he gives Benjamin five times more in a sack than the others. So Joseph's kind of showing favoritism over Benjamin, just like their father Jacob does. That's his full brother. But what does five in biblical numerics stand for? We just talked about it first thing this morning. Grace of God. Again, it's written in the number, God's plan taking effect. So I want us to really focus here on what's taking place more to the last half of this chapter. So Joseph is showering these men with hospitality. These men still unaware that Joseph is who he is. He's still playing the role of that Egyptian leader. But what's Joseph's hospitality representing? God's love and hospitality for all his creations, even sometimes over ones who do not know or understand where these blessings are coming from, right? So just like here, his brothers don't know why they're receiving this hospitality from their brother. Just like sometimes we don't understand why God's given us the love and hospitality that we get. So another way we can apply this to our lives as Christians is we live in a fast-paced world, right? So we rarely get to slow down and really see and recognize God's blessings and what they are. Whether it's a thunderstorm, which waters our crops and food, whether it's getting stuck by a train, which could be protecting you from a car crash, or even financial struggle that could be protecting us from long-term financial imprisonment. The point is, whatever the case may be, we often get stuck and see the minor inconveniences, which look major to us at the time, that we forget that God's plan has an outcome for each and every one of us, a greater outcome than our own. And we have to pay attention to God's true blessing and always honor and give him the remembrance he deserves, because God's plan of action is and always will be greater in our lives, way better than our plan of action. So it's not about what's happening right now. It's about what is God's greater outcome? We may not understand that, but we have to give that full faith that and know that he's going to watch out for us. Maybe a minor inconvenience now that looks big, but his plan will always be greater than our own.
Amen.